Hi, Sharon. Thank you. Hi, everyone. Happy Monday. I'm here now for sharing from my journal regarding the 7 steps to awakening. And I did that last night as well. And we stopped last night on quote number 52, which means we will start today on quote number 53. For those of you who are in the room, I'm going to give you a link, and this goes directly to my journal, to quote number 53, so that you'll be able to click on it and then join with me as I go through the journal if you want to. If somebody is listening on the radio or listening on the recording and you want to join us, you can go to RDA, the digit 7, RDA 7 Steps Journal .wordpress.com. And when you get to RDA 7 Steps Journal .wordpress.com, in order to get to number 53, which is where we'll begin, you just click on Step 1 up on the menu bar. And then click on option C, which is numbers 51 to 75. And then you'll find number 53 from there. Again, for the people in the room, here is a link to number 53, which is where we will begin today. What I would like to do before we begin is just start with a moment of silence. So if you all would join me for that, I would appreciate it. Thank you. Amen. All right, so as I mentioned, I'm beginning with quote number 53. And I will post the link one more time. I see some others have entered the room. I'm going to begin, of course, reading from the book, The 7 Steps to Awakening. Right now we're reading quotes by Sri Muruganar. And quote number 53 is the last quote on page 25 of the book. So I'll start by reading that quote. The enduring attainment is to become established in the heart, abiding as the pure I, unruffled by the fierce gale whipped up by all the various branches of knowledge that are apprehended through the mind and senses and cause us agitation. Again, the poetic Muruganar. The enduring attainment is to become established in the heart, abiding as the pure I, unruffled by the fierce gale whipped up by all the various branches of knowledge that are apprehended through the mind and senses and cause us agitation. So looking at what I wrote in my journal after contemplating this quote. Although the senses report many things, the practice is to stay placed firmly in the heart, the seat of happiness, thereby unruffled by whatever the senses have to report. That is, unruffled by however the mind interprets what the senses report. Equally unruffled by what is interpreted as good or favorable, as with that which is interpreted as bad or favorable. Or unfavorable, sorry. So it looks like as I was contemplating Muruganar's quote, I came to see that it's not necessarily what the senses report directly that might seem to agitate us or upset us, but it's the mind's interpretation. And as I looked at that, I saw it's not just the mind's interpretation of what's, quote, bad, but it's also the mind's interpretation of what's, quote, good. If I like to have things organized in a certain way, and I share my space with others, whether they're family members or roommates or whatever, but I share my space with others and they move things around, they don't put things back, they put things away in different places. Well, then I might think it's really good when I get everything organized the way I like it, and I may be very happy with my organization. But then when my eyes report that things have been moved around, my happiness turns to unhappiness. And so I think we all know this, but we can't hold on to our judgments of good and expect our judgments of bad to fall away. The truth is we have to let go of judgment altogether. We have to let go of listening to the mind's interpretations altogether. And yet Marie has typed in the forms that bind. You know, and I think that at least my interpretation of what she has typed in is our judgments of good actually bind us to our judgment because that's the favorable experience. And then we suffer when the judgments of bad appear. So again, my contemplation of number 53 is, although the senses report many things, the practice is to stay placed firmly in the heart, the seat of happiness, thereby unruffled by whatever the senses have to report. That is, unruffled by however the mind interprets what the senses report. Equally unruffled by what is interpreted as good or favorable, as with that which is interpreted as bad or unfavorable. So again, I need to watch my joy that seems to be based on something in form. I talked about this last Friday as well. I said in the Course in Miracles teaching last Friday that our special relationships aren't really with people. Our special relationships are with ideas. And so when I have a special relationship with ideas as good, again, that binds me to my own judgment, binds me to my own mind interpretations. And so as a result, I will suffer when the mind then interprets something as bad or unfavorable. So I need to watch my excitement, my happiness, my joy, because, based on judgment, as much as I need to watch my agitation, my anger, my hatred, because, based on judgment. Because in truth, they are fully linked, and you can't have one and not have the other. All right, so if you're in the journal, what you can do is scroll down Below the comments area, above the dark gray area, and to the left, you'll see a little number 54. Click on the little number 54, and that will take you to our next journal entry, and I'm pasting that in the room. I'm going to go to page 26 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. We're actually done with Muru Ganar. There weren't near as many Muru Ganar quotes as there were Ramana Maharshi quotes. And now we're at Sri Annamalai Swami. And this is someone that I am completely unfamiliar with. Sri Annamalai Swami. Quote number 54. All the information the mind accumulates and all the experiences it collects are ignorance, false knowledge. Real knowledge cannot be found in the mind or in any external location. All the information the mind accumulates and all the experiences it collects are ignorance, false knowledge. Real knowledge cannot be found in the mind or in any external location. And if you've been doing step one in the seven steps or listening to me as I share from my journal, you know that this is a very common theme, and that's because this is the main objective of step one, to realize that awakening does not occur through mind learning, and that what the mind calls knowledge is not knowledge at all, that in fact it's the ignorance that hides knowledge. So what we will do is go to number 54 in my journal. Actually, I think I might need to let Jamie out first. Hold on 1 second. All right, number 54 in my journal. The mind seems to be a reliable source of information regarding the world and self, but this is an illusion. The mind is the creator and maintainer of the false self. All of mind's interpretations, thoughts, and counsel support and maintain the false self. Since mind creates, supports, and maintains a false self, listening to it, believing it, and trusting it is to be ignorant regarding capital S self, regarding reality. See mind's thoughts, interpretations, and counsel as ignorant guidance. Through a desire not to be deceived, do not listen to mind. Wait patiently for the heart's guidance. Be only the true self. It is very easy for us to maybe surrender in some areas. Maybe surrender, for example, in the area of spiritual practice because something in us realizes we don't know how to wake up. And so we let, you know, inner guidance select for us what books we'll read or what teachers we'll listen to or what practice we'll do. But then when it comes to figuring out the budget or when it comes to what else do we do? Anything that we do in the world where we've been educated in how to do it. We may not think to check in with guidance at all. Because it does seem that, you know, we're intelligent people. We've learned a few things in this lifetime. Most of us are over 40, so we've learn from trial and error and education, and we know how to do some things. and because we've lived long enough, you know, we feel that our experience, our learning, is fairly reliable. And lots of times, it seems like What we know just makes sense. But what I received as I contemplated this thought from Sri Annamalai Swami is that all of that believing that I just described, all of that trusting what we've learned in life that I just described, all of that is set up to keep us thinking we are this false self. Which means although it appears reliable, it seems reasonable, we think it's knowledge. In reality, it's that which keeps us in complete ignorance about who we are, about what is true. And of course, if we're ignorant about who we are and what is true, then we are actually indeed completely ignorant. So again, I mentioned that this is the objective of this section, and maybe here, number 54, is where the objective really started to sink in for me. I mentioned to a friend of mine yesterday that when I first started doing the seven steps, I experienced two types of resistance. The first type of resistance only lasted for about three quotes, maybe 3 to 5 quotes max. It went away pretty quickly. But the first type of resistance was, this is going to take for friggin' ever to go through this book. I joke with her, I wanted the quick enlightenment. You know, I just didn't want to have to do all this. I wanted something fast. But the other resistance, which lasted a little longer, was the feeling that the quotes were just repeating themselves, and kind of a similar thought, you know, like I wasn't getting anywhere. Barbara's saying ditto on one of those two resistances. But I think when this quote came, here I am contemplating the exact same thing that's been said over and over and over again, right? That the information in the mind that we think of as knowledge is not real knowledge, that real knowledge can not be found in the mind, you know. And boom, something hit me. Something became clear. That this wasn't just yada, 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 yada. That whenever I depended on my own, what appeared to be my own reasonable knowledge to make a decision, a very common everyday decision, that whole thing was set up to reinforce the belief in the false self and to reinforce the belief in illusion. And then I think I really saw with clarity that what I think I know is ignorance. I felt like I understood the definition of the word ignorance better than I ever have before. So number 54 from my journal. The mind seems to be a reliable source of information regarding the world and self. Right? But this is an illusion. The mind is the creator and maintainer of the false self. All of mind's interpretations, thoughts, and counsel support and maintain the false self. Again, all of mind's interpretations, thoughts, and counsel support and maintain the false self. Since mind creates, supports, and maintains a false self, listening to it, believing it, and trusting it is to be ignorant regarding true self, regarding reality. So here's the prescription now that has been realized. See mind's thoughts, interpretations, and counsel as ignorant guidance. So we really need to begin to see what we might have thought of was just normal life-earned wisdom. We need to start to see that as ignorance. See mind's thoughts, interpretations, and counsel as ignorant guidance. Through a desire not to be deceived, do not listen to mind. Wait patiently for the heart's guidance. Be only the true self. All right, scrolling down to number 55. Scrolling down, and on the left, I'm going to click on number 55, and hopefully this time I'll be able to get the proper link so I can paste it in the room. Yep, it's showing up as number 55 now. Here you go, Monica. This is the link. And in the book, it's our second Sri Annamalai Swami quote. Quote number 55, this is it. Don't be interested in the words that the mind is serving up for you. It is putting them there to tempt you into a stream of thoughts that will take you away from the self. You have to ignore them all and focus on the light that is shining within you. Again, Sri Annamalai Swami. Don't be interested in the words that the mind is serving up for you. It is putting them there to tempt you into a stream of thoughts that will take you away from the self. You have to ignore them all and focus on the light that is shining within you. And now, hold on, Jamie wants back in. All right, so with the dirty dog at my side, very happy dirty dog, let's go to my journal and read number 55 in the journal. The first few words of any new mind stream needs to be seen as temptation to believe illusion. To become interested in the first few words is to get caught in a current of illusion from which it may be quite difficult to become free. Just as you would not wander into a strong water current hoping not to be swept away, do not wander into even the first few words of a thought stream. Stand firmly on the solid bank of the heart. The solid bank of constant truth. So you can probably tell by this journal entry that an image was provided for me. And the image was, of course, a river moving very, very quickly. And, it was just obvious, common sense, not to go wading into that river. Because if you went wading into that river, you would be swept away. You were not going to make it to the other shore. And that's what was used as the symbolism of this journal entry. You know, again, just as you would not wander into a strong water current, hoping not to be swept away, do not wander into even the first few words of a thought stream. And I think I've mentioned to you that since I've started the seven steps, one thing that's happened for me is that the ego is being, what's the word for it? I can see it again. I think I used the example of maybe like when I had first started with the course, maybe, you could see me as like a jar of mud with a little bit of water floating on the top of the mud. And that water was the willingness to begin this path. And as I went through A Course in Miracles and NTI and my relationship with Laurent and all of that, what was happening is things were being seen and let go, which was like taking the mud out of that jar. And eventually there was a lot more liquid, but what had happened was some dirt or some mud, it kind of settled at the bottom. So there was this feeling of being clear, but actually that's because everything that was left was settled at the bottom. And when I started the seven steps, it's like somebody took that jar and shook it up so that the mud is now up in consciousness again. It's being seen. So in some ways, it feels like I see a lot more ego in my mind now than I have in the last year or 2 years, who knows, something like that. And so in that way, it feels like a little bit more of a challenge again. It feels kind of like that step backwards that Jesus talks about, you know, when he says we do not know our advances from our retreats. It has that feeling of a step backwards, going back to the beginning. And so what I'm finding as a result of that is that I kind of need new practices. Because it is, again, easy to maybe get caught up in a thought stream. You know, a few words are served up, a story that sounds interesting, and I'm off in the story again. So the practice that I've been using, which is working, helping me, I don't know if it will help anyone else, but I will tell you, is that I just repeat the first few words of the thought stream. It kind of brings it to my attention so that I don't follow it. Because usually when we follow a thought stream, it's because somehow we're deeply involved without paying attention to the fact that we're deeply involved. It's like all of our attention is there, but we aren't paying attention to the fact that all of our attention is there. So if a thought stream should pop up, something like, you know, something like, gosh, I wanted this put here and so-and-so has put it there. You know, before my mind goes running down that stream, I just within myself just say, ah, you know. So there's that thought that I like things organized or, so I thought I wanted that put there. Or I think I do more of the first. I say, oh, so there's that thought that I want things organized. There's that thought about so-and-so, you know, this person. Oh, here I am thinking, you know, that I'm concerned about what others will think of me. It's kind of a practice I used before. Some of you may remember me talking about it years ago. I used to call it labeling the content of the thought. And I'm back to doing that again because somehow if I just call it by name, say, oh, that's what this thought's about, that's what this story's about, that's what's happening, and if I do it very quickly, then I don't go into that story without paying attention. So it's helping me to stay out of that current. It feels like a bit of work right now. But that's all right. That's just another thought. That's just another thought stream. This is too much work. Right? So, again, yeah, Maria's saying the recognition versus the scooting it under the carpet. So the first few words of any new mind stream needs to be seen as temptation to believe illusion. It needs to be seen that way. This is what this is. To become interested in the first few words is to get caught in a current of illusion from which it may be quite difficult to become free. Just as you would not wander into a strong water current hoping not to be swept away, do not wander into even the first few words of a thought stream. Stand firmly on the solid bank of the heart. Excuse me, the solid bank of constant truth. All right, so we can scroll down and to the left and click on number 56. And I will also post this in the room, this link. And Barbara is saying, could you say that there is that victim thought again, or do you go with more literal thoughts? Yeah, I could say something like that. Oh, there's that victim thought again. Absolutely. It's just calling attention to the story. Because again, even though it's kind of funny, you know, it doesn't really make sense. What happens when we get caught in a thought stream is that all of our attention is sucked into it. But our attention is sucked into it without us noticing. So it's like our attention is there and not there at the same time. So it's calling attention to it from the observer point of view so that the attention doesn't get sucked in, if that makes any sense at all. That's what it is. Yeah. All right, so now we're going to be, I've posted the link for number 56. We're going to go back to the book. We're already done with Sri Annamalai Swami. We only had two quotes from him. Now we're going to one that many of you may know. All right, so Sri Nisargadatta, quote number 56. Those who know only scriptures know nothing. To know is to be. I know what I am talking about. It is not from reading or hearsay. If you know Nisargadatta, this sounds very much like him. Those who know only scriptures know nothing. To know is to be. I know what I am talking about. It is not from reading or hearsay. So if we look at the journal, number 56, I wrote, scriptures point to truth, but they are not truth itself. I am truth itself. Find that, and truth is realized. And I think certainly many of us have fallen for the distraction of studying scriptures as if we would find the answer there. I think that as a whole, for at least some time, maybe still for some people, it's still going on in the Course community, there was this almost fundamental thought that kind of put the Course on a pedestal as the new Bible, the new scripture, the new truth. And for a time, maybe everything else was compared to the Course, and if it was different than the Course, it was not the truth. You know, so we had a spotlight on the Course. And this is saying, of course, and I think most of us now have realized that that was a mistake, that the Course is not the truth. What we are, I am, that's the truth. The Course is there to help us let go of the belief in the false self so that we can realize the truth that is already present, the truth that we already are. So scriptures point to truth, but they are not truth itself. I am truth itself. Find that, and truth is realized. And of course, when Jesus made very similar statements to this, in his lifetime, he was seen to be blasphemous. You know, a statement similar to, I am truth itself. But now I think we understand he was not speaking that his body, that individual body was the truth. It's the I am, which is in all of us. So we can all say, I am truth itself. But of course, when we say that, we want to realize we are not referring to the false self. It is the false self that must be released, given up, not believed in order to realize the I am. And that then is realizing truth. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 57. Again, that's over on the left side, just above the dark gray. And one more time, I will put the link in the room, and then if nobody else shows up, I won't paste it again. I'll assume you're all in the journal. The second Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. Oh, I just remembered a third resistance I experienced going through the book. I didn't experience it until I got to Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, but many of his quotes are very short. And I felt like the resistance felt like there wasn't enough meat to chew on there. How was I supposed to have realization from such short sentences? If you glance over to page 27, you'll see there's some very short sentences. So I did experience different resistances, but I would just keep going anyway, you know, not let the resistance stop me. And then eventually the resistance has died down. All right, so number 57, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. On the verbal level, everything is relative. Absolutes should be experienced, not discussed. Okay, so let's look at number 57 in the journal. And I did get something out of this short quote after I spent time with it and didn't let my frustration, my resistance stop me. Words, at best, have relative meaning. Relative to the experience and mind of the communicator and of the listener. Truth cannot be learned through words. Forget words, including the narration in one's mind. Tune into the actual experience of it all, of what is present. Without the interpretation of external teaching and internal narration, what is seen? So again, Nisargadatta said, on the verbal level, everything is relative. Absolutes should be experienced, not discussed. And it's true that although we're going to continue to use words, even Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj is using words here, words just have different meanings. In fact, something else that started for me, I've never done this before. I find when I'm reading these quotes in the seven steps, I frequently, I mean like multiple times a day, you know, four or five times a day, feel to pull out the dictionary and look up a word. And it's not because I don't think I know what the word means. It's because it turns out to be that maybe the definition that I have in the word, although it's an appropriate definition, might not be exactly the way that this person was communicating it. And when I read through the definition, something in me tunes into a particular definition and says, that's the specific definition here. So I find that the dictionary, which I've never, you know, paid a lot of attention to, I've always paid some attention, but I've never been a big dictionary person. The dictionary is like a secondary book for me, but it's happening through guidance. I'll feel guided to look up a word, because again, I think I know the definition. But then as I read through the definitions, one kind of shines. I go, oh, that's the nuance of what's trying to be communicated here. And if I had just read the quote without following the guidance to look up the word and let the nuance be shown to me, I might have had a slightly different understanding of the quote. So you see, we listen to words and we think we know what those words mean. But many words have multiple definitions, you know, and the definition that we're most commonly used to comes from our experience, our education. And so someone is speaking and they're using words meaning to convey a certain meaning, but we're listening with a different understanding of the same words and we are receiving a different message. So that cannot be the most effective communication. And so that's, again, why we need to pay attention to that inner guidance. Just because words are not effective as communication does not mean we won't receive effective communication. We just have to not be dependent on the words. We need to be dependent on our own inner guidance. If our own inner guidance, you know, guides us to say, wait a minute, this is what I'm understanding. Is this what you're saying? And repeat back in different words, that's perfect. If our inner guidance has us doing what I'm doing, looking things up in a dictionary and letting a different definition kind of shine clarity on what's being said here, that's perfect. Whatever. But if we depend on guidance to make the message clear instead of depending on the words, we are doing much better. But then, you know, he went on to say, he not only said the first sentence, on the verbal level, everything is relative. Everything I just said was related to that first sentence. On the verbal level, everything is relative. But he went on to say, absolutes should be experienced, not discussed. And as I contemplated that second part of this very short quote, I realized that just because the mouth is shut, that does not mean that absolutes are being experienced, because the mind is constantly talking with words. It's a commentator. It's interpreting everything all of the time. And so if we're listening to the mind, we are still not experiencing the absolutes. And so I went on to realize that those words must be let go also. That we need to learn to depend on an intuitiveness that does not use words, and let that intuitiveness guide us in everything. Because any interpretation that uses words, whether it's external or internal, blocks the absolute experience. So number 57 in my journal, words at best have relative meaning, relative to the experience and mind of the communicator and of the listener. Truth cannot be learned through words. Forget words, including the narration in one's mind. Tune into the actual experience of it all, of what is present, without the interpretation of external teaching and internal narration. What is seen? So if we let go of everything we've been taught and everything we think, then what do we find? All right, scrolling down and to the left, we will click on number 58. Quote number 58 by Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj in the book says, "Truth is simple and open to all. Why do you complicate? Truth is loving and lovable." Of course, that reminds me of Jesus in A Course in Miracles. He tells us that this course is simple, right? Truth is simple and open to all. Why do you complicate? Truth is loving and lovable. So number 58 in my journal. It is the mind that wants truth to be complex, profound, and deep in understanding. It is time to end this journey of the mind and just be with whatever presents itself. Do nothing. Be in glory and let truth be revealed. Probably again, most of us, since we are have been Course in Miracles students or are Course in Miracles students, probably most of us know the thrill of a deep, profound realization. Now, I'm not saying these realizations did not need to occur, because they did, at least the ones that I feel I've had, they needed it some time to occur. But what was happening simultaneous to these realizations occurring that needed to occur is that the mind became in love with that. The mind became in love with the deep, profound realization. And so the mind just began to crave more and more deep, profound realizations. So the mind, of course, was not after, I'll call it the simple realization of truth. The mind was under, let's be deep, let's be profound. You know? That's what the mind was after. And that's where a lot of complexity comes in. Because you cannot have deep and profound if you do not first have complex. Right? So the mind is the one that wants truth to be complex. That way we can have these deep, profound understandings. So seeing that, it is time for us to lose interest in deep, profound understandings. And this does not mean that realizations will not still occur. They will. It just means we want to let go of our thrill, our attachment, our desire for deep, profound, and seek only truth. It's funny how we can get slightly off target, right? So it is time to end this journey of the mind and just be. That's the practice. Just be with whatever presents itself. Be with it without judgment. Be with it without judging it as good, without judging it as bad, without judging it as wanted, without judging it as unwanted. If we judge it at all, then the judgment should just be that it's here, now. It's present. It is as it is, as NTI Romans would say. That's the only judgment that NTI says is a helpful judgment, pointing in the right direction. Ultimately, still not true, but more helpful than any other judgment. It is what it is. So it is the mind that wants truth to be complex, profound, and deep in understanding. It is time to end this journey of the mind and just be with whatever presents itself. Do nothing. Be in glory. And let truth be revealed. So this is a big stepping back. Instead of trying to master the spiritual path in an aggressive mind way, it's a big stepping back, a big release, a big just being present and trusting that realization will be given. Truth will be revealed. Of course, many of us will find that learning to just be is a struggle in itself. That we can't, just being requires some effort when we aren't used to just being and we have other habits. So that's where our effort needs to go. Our effort needs to go in letting go of everything that's in the way of just being rather than trying to have deep, profound understanding. All right, let's scroll down and to the left and click on number 59. And in the book, at the very bottom of page 26, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj said, "Give up all questions except one. Who am I? After all, the only fact you are sure of is that you are. The I am is certain. The I am this is not. Struggle to find out what you are in reality." You know, it's interesting because I just said that the only effort we really need to be applying is the effort to let go of all of our habits that are in the way of just being. Right? So I'm not saying it's effortless, but I'm saying that's the effort. The effort is to let go of all of our habits and just be. He's using the word struggle. Struggle to find out who you are in reality. And again, he's not encouraging us to go into intellectual struggle. But he's acknowledging that because we are in the habit of being the false self, that there will be a strong effort required to let go of those habits. Such a strong effort that he calls it struggle. Again, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj said, "Give up all questions except one. Who am I? After all, the only fact you are sure of is that you are." And we do all know that. We all know we exist. We all know I am. The I am is certain. The I am, this, is not. Struggle to find out what you are in reality. So, number 59 in the journal. I wrote, "I know I exist. This is a fact that cannot be denied in any moment. But what am I? Am I this body? Am I this brain? Am I the sum of these thoughts? Am I the breath? Do I have a beginning and an end? What is learned identity or false identity? And what is truth? Who am I?" Ask these questions and assume nothing. Wait for the answer beyond doubt to present itself. Do not give up. It will come. It will come fully. It's funny, the question that I asked here, the self-inquiry question that I asked that is standing out to me right now is the one, what is learned identity or what is false identity? You know, we were all told, for at least some time we believed it, we may still believe it, but for at least some time I think we probably all believed it. We were all told that we were born and that was the beginning of our life. And most of us for a very long time never questioned that. We never realized that we were taught we had a beginning. Certainly none of us have a conscious memory of a beginning. Like I remember the first instance that I was. Before that, I wasn't. You know, none of us have that. But we were all taught there was a first instance that we were. And we just believed it. And that, again, is a universal teaching belief. There are also many cultural teaching beliefs, family teaching beliefs, right? So, of course, self-inquiry is about no longer assuming that what we have been told, even what everybody on the planet has been told, and therefore everybody believes and considers a fact, but no longer assuming that is a fact. Questioning everything. And again, Sri Nisargadatta used the word struggle. Here at the bottom of my journal entry, I said, ask these questions and assume nothing. Wait for the answer beyond doubt to present itself, which means it's not an intellectual answer. You can't get it in a book or from a teacher. Wait for the answer beyond doubt to present itself. And then I wrote, do not give up. Similar to his idea of struggle, right? Do not give up. It will come. It will come fully. All right, then, scrolling down to the left, clicking on number 60. And at the top of page 27 in the Seven Steps to Awakening, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj said, all these questions, and of course he's sitting here talking to someone, probably sitting in his living room. I believe that's, if I'm correct, that's how he taught, sitting in his living room talking. You know, he didn't have an ashram or anything like that. He was a working guy, right? So he's sitting in his living room talking to somebody, and he says, all these questions arise from your believing yourself to be a person. Go beyond the personal and see. So again, somebody's sitting there in his living room asking question after question, you know, seeming to really want to learn the truth from this wise, awakened being. And he says, all these questions arise from your believing yourself to be a person. Go beyond the personal and see. And I remember when I read this quote, I do think I was on the plane returning from India, and there was a question in my mind, and the question was, how? How do you go beyond the personal? It's one thing to tell some guy in your living room, go beyond the personal and see. But, you know, how? And so, since that question was in my mind, as I contemplated this quote, an answer was given. And so if we look at number 60 in my journal, go beyond the person by laying down all thoughts of the person. Disregard character interpretation and commentary. Do not agree to be the person character, and the person character shall be transcended. So, of course, what we need to notice is how much and all the ways that we are still choosing to be the person, that we are still agreeing to be the person. You know, the stories that we're believing where we're one of the characters in the stories, the values that we think are important, which are actually the character's values that we're acting out as if they're truly meaningful. We need to start noticing how we are holding on to being that person character. And we need to start saying, you know, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm just not. So if I'm the one that, quote, likes to be organized, and that's always been kind of a struggle for me because of who I live with, just drop it. Heck, I'm not winning that battle anyway. Just drop it. Don't be that person. I mean, there's an identification there. I'm the one who likes to be organized. Right? Like Bob Newhart would say, just stop it. Don't be that person. You know, people will say, I worry about this all the time. Well, Bob Newhart would say, just stop it. And it looks like Nisargadatta is agreeing with him. Well, just stop it. Don't be that person who worries. Don't be that person anymore. Go beyond the person by laying down all thoughts of the person. Disregard character, interpretation, and commentary. Disregard it. Do not agree to be the person character, and the person character shall be transcended. Right? Yeah, so Heather is writing, Inner Ramana has helped me with this. Drop the onion. Yeah, and I think we all needed to peel the onion back for a time. It was a part of our learning process, but this does appear to be the teaching that most of us are attracted to now. No more peeling back of the onion, but drop it. Okay, we have 3 minutes left. Let's see what we can do with that. Why don't we scroll down and go to number 61, click on that. And I will read number 61 in the book, which is one of these short quotes. The realized man knows what others merely hear but don't experience. This was one of the short quotes that I felt resistance to. I'm, you know, like, what the heck am I supposed to get out of that? But I had to let go of my resistance and allow the contemplation, right? So that I could learn, hear, feel, know what it was I was to get out of this quote. The realized man knows what others merely hear but don't experience, right? That's the quote. And so after letting go of my resistance and contemplating, this is what I got in my journal, number 61. Knowing comes from being. Without being, one cannot proclaim to know. Do not be the person. One cannot be the person and know self too. The choice not to be the person removes the obstacle of attachment to the person. Make this choice consistently. This is best practice. So, you know, I have a dog that I live with. And, you know, many people would not argue with me if I say, yeah, I know dogs. I have a dog. I know dogs. But the clarity that came is I may live with a dog. I may observe a dog. I may have ideas about a dog. But unless I am a dog, I don't know dog. It's all imagined interpretation. And in fact, you can see that if you're here with Jamie. Jamie will do something, have a look on her face or something, and Danielle will say, Jamie wants this. And, you know, Jasmine says, no, I think she wants that. And I'm sitting there thinking, no, actually, I think she wants it. We don't know dogs. We imagine we know dogs, and Jamie may get fed because that was the interpretation that won. But we don't know dogs. We don't know self either, as long as we know ourself to be a person, think of ourself as a person, have all of those values and ideas. So the realized man knows what others merely hear but don't experience. What I got out of that was knowing comes from being. Without being, one cannot proclaim to know. do not be the person. One cannot be the person and no self too. The choice not to be the person removes the obstacle of attachment to the person. Make this choice consistently. This is best practice. So let's notice when those habits show up, those habits that belong to this person, those values, the desire to be organized, whatever. And let's take Bob Newhart's advice and stop it. And that's it for me today. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.